We'll call this meeting to order of the State Government Finance Committee, and we have an action item. We have to wait till we get a quorum. When we get that, we'll maybe before we break into questions, we'll do that. Anyway, welcome to our committee, and proceed with your presentation.
Good morning. My name is Julie Blaha, and I'm your state auditor, and I'm very excited to be here on this Pi Day talking about funding, which is the perfect way to start a day to celebrate Einstein's birthday and the magical relationship between the diameter and the circumference of a circle. I'm once a math teacher, always a math teacher, right? With me also is our director of finance, and I'll let you yourself.
Hi, my name is Matt Lindemann. I'm the director of budget, finance, and technology for the State Auditor's Office.
So basically, what we plan to do is go through our change items take any questions that you may have here. When we put our budget together this year, our goals were to be responsive to Minnesotans on local financial matters, ready to take on any work as needed, and connected to those we serve. So, as a reminder of who we are, I have here the entire presentation we did last time. I will not go through that again. I know that you were paying attention, so I won't go through it again. If we have to review anything, though, know that we can come back and discuss that if needed. But just as a reminder, our largest expenditure in our office is our people. We currently have 79 people on staff out of our metro office here in St. Paul, Duluth, Rochester, Marshall, Mankato, and Moorhead. We oversee over $20 billion in spending every year by local government. So to start, here, I'm almost have this. Let's start with our first item that we are proposing this year. Right now, Minnesota's townships, 1,782 of them, represent over 900,000 Minnesotans, and they oversee important things, including 55,000 miles of roads. So if you care about particularly greater Minnesota and transportation, you care about townships. Now, we have approximately 100 of our townships that are struggling with reporting requirements. We're not getting reports back in from them. Now, that could be a red flag. Sometimes it's transition. Sometimes it's staffing. Sometimes it's a problem. One of our goals is if we catch them at the point where we have a problem with reporting, we don't have to catch them in special investigations. And we also believe that our townships deserve continuity and experience. Right now, we are serving our townships primarily with our interns. And as wonderful as our interns are, they don't have the consistency that our counties and cities get. And so we really need to give them a permanent person that they can build a relationship with and can also follow them through all the work that they do. So let's now go through the numbers of how we built this item.
So the OSA is requesting one full-time staff person for our government information division. This person would work with townships to help them meet their reporting requirements to the OSA. We're requesting $94,000 in fiscal year 2020 for salaries and benefits, and we're requesting $96,000 for salary and benefits in 2021 for a total of $190,000 for the biennium. We will be looking for a person who is experienced in local government finance, is able to interact with people, is interested in teaching and helping others, and is patient. This represents a 0.9% increase in the OSA's 2021 general fund base appropriation.
Our second item is that we're looking to refill administrative support. As you're looking at these positions, these are all positions that at one time existed in our office, basically. At the high point, our staffing under Judy Dutcher was at about 145 FTE. Right now, we're at 79. And some of that drop, of course, was necessary based on the work we were doing. But now we're trying to get to a place where we make sure we keep that infrastructure together. Some of the things we're doing right now is increasing our outreach to local government entities, And our legal and special investigations division is getting more attention and more requests from local law enforcement. Based on the work they've done, law enforcement is talking to each other and saying, hey, go to the auditor's office. They can help you out with these financial issues. And as a result, we're getting more requests and pressure on that staff. Now, we could go and try to say, we'll add another lawyer, or we'll add another full-time, say, communications person. We believe that we can increase the effectiveness of these offices by adding administrative staff. Lower cost, more efficient, because right now, for instance, in my office, I don't have an executive assistant. Right now, you all have more direct support than I have. I don't have an LA. We don't have a chief of staff. We don't have that structure in our office right now. In our legal department, we also don't have that structure. So our lawyers do all of their own administrative work that a law clerk would normally do. So we arguably have the lowest amount of administrative support for the constitutional legal divisions of any of the constitutional offices. And I think that for those of us who know how valuable administrative support is and how much they add to your team, we're going to focus on adding that level of support before we look at adding any of the other staff to those areas. So
for this change item, we're requesting two positions. The first position is a full-time position to work with the Constitution Division, work with the state auditor to help her fulfill her duties. We're asking for $82,000 for salaries and benefits in 2020. And $85,000 for salaries and benefits in 2021, for a total of $167,000 for the biennium. We're looking for someone with previous support experience, strong organizational skills, great interpersonal skills. The second position that we're looking for is a full-time position to work with our legal and special investigations division. This person would work with the lawyers, with communications, filing and organizational duties. We're requesting $76,000 for salaries and benefits in 2020 and $79,000 in salaries and benefits for 2021 for a total of $155,000 for the biennium. We'll be looking for someone with support experience, good organizational skills, good interpersonal skills. This change item represents a 1.6% increase in our base general fund base appropriation.
All right. Another position that has been unfilled in our office for the last few years has been one of our deputies. Statute allows us, in addition to the executive assistant, also allows us three deputies. The refilling a deputy will allow our office to reorganize, to be really effective. Our work has changed based on the some of the law changes previously. We're doing different work, and we need to do a little bit of reorganization to handle that. Currently, right now, our two deputies are not only filling their leadership roles, but in addition, our audit deputy is also serving as chief of staff. He also signs off on all the audits. I sign off on all of that. Our other deputy is also our general counsel and my proxy. So everyone's doing several jobs right now. And while they're amazing at it, it is not at all a sustainable way to go forward. So we think that, again, we're still going to have fewer people than the rest of the constitutional offices, but this should get us at least to a place where we're filling those roles more effectively.
So for this change item, we're requesting one full-time person to supervise the government information and operations divisions. This person will work with the state auditor in these divisions to fulfill the mission of the OSA. We're requesting $157,000 in salaries and benefits for 2020 and $160,000 in salaries and benefits for 2021 for a total of $317,000 for the biennium. We're looking for someone with leadership experience, knowledge in technology and government, finance, greater interpersonal skills, great leadership skills. This change item represents a 1.6% increase in our general fund base appropriation.
All right. And finally, the basis of all this, our operating adjustment. Looking at the operating adjustment, we look to simply keep up with inflation. And preserve the ability to respond if we get new petitions and requests. Now, this part is, I think, one of the more interesting parts of the way we budget these things. As a former treasurer, sometimes I would budget this slightly differently in the way you look at it. But the numbers we're talking here, you'll see audit staff, about 13, if I'm not mistaken, about 13 audit staff listed there. Now, that audit staff would only be hired on if we had any work for them to do. So this group would be covered also by fees. We're not just going to add them on and hope we get the work. We're going to get the work and then add them on if we get the work. But if we don't, we're not adding them on. So these would be people that would be only added on if we are receiving fees to cover their work. So this is so a lot of this addition here is more budget neutral than our other four positions that we're talking about.
So for this change item, we're requesting $259,000 for increases in operating costs in 2020. This will maintain 3.7 full-time equivalent positions for that year. For 2021, we're requesting $525,000, which will maintain 6.56 full-time positions, equivalent positions, for a total increase of $784,000 for the biennium. Along with this, there will be corresponding revenue that should be collected of $731,000 to result in a net increase of only $53,000 for the biennium. For this, we look to fund increases in salaries and insurance and other contractual obligated employee compensation. Looking to fund increases in space rent commitments, and also to fund other increases in operating costs. The operating adjustment represents a 3.86% increase in the OSA's biennial base budget, but less than 0.3% when taking into consideration the collection of audit fees.
So in summary, what we're asking for is to restore four positions so we can be ready and responsive. We want to hold the potential to fill audit positions, but only if needed. So the net change would be, when you consider income and outgo, it would be a 4.5% increase. And I also want to remember, too, as people are coming today, that we have one of the smaller bases on which you are calculating percentages. So with 80 people, we're 79 people, we're one of the smaller offices that you're looking at. And we believe that this is basically what we need to handle what we have right now. This is not about expansion. This is not about anything growing the office in any unusual way, but just keeping our infrastructure together and making sure we're ready if needed. And with that, we'd be happy to take any questions.
I'm going to call the meeting to order. We have a quorum now, officially to order, and members. First thing I want to take care of before we get to questions is the House File 2118. We need to return this to the Ways and Means Committee. I'm going to make a motion that House File 2118 be returned to the Ways and Means Committee.
So moved.
All those in favor? Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this inherently without recommendation?
Yes. Without any recommendations. So we're just returning it to Ways and Means. Chair Bonding wants to see this, and that's why it's going, we're sending it back there so she gets it. She wants to hear all these on tomorrow, I believe it is. So she wants it in her possession tomorrow. Okay. Anyway, all in favor of returning House File 2118 to Ways and Means, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Questions now. First question I have is for Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as the Duluth legislator, I'd be curious to hear a little bit how you're thinking about your field offices and your change requests here and how you plan to move forward with your field offices.
Auditor.
Chair Nelson, Representative, thank you. Our field offices, it's been interesting watching the evolution of those offices. You know, one of the things you probably know about most financial work is that you can do a lot of it remotely now. You can be doing work across the state in different offices, different areas. So I heard at one point someone suggested, well, you could bring everybody back in. You could bring everybody into St. Paul and do all the work out of there. They would have to travel once in a while because part of an audit's on site, but most of the audit can be done remotely. But, you know, I think auditors in the past have maintained our field offices because not only does it save some money, one, space is cheaper to rent in virtually every one of our field offices than it is to rent in the metro. In addition, these are good jobs, and Greater Minnesota deserves these jobs as much as the metro does. I think, but maybe even most importantly, having geographic diversity in our staff helps us be much more responsive to local government. Local government is different around the state, and if you have people around the state, you understand it better. So even if our work shifts geographically, we are able to still get the work done. So the idea would be we want to maintain field offices. And in fact, if we were to get new work, if we're going to add staff on, it would make sense to add them on in a Greater Minnesota space. And this way, again, we not only stay connected to our communities, but we make sure that everyone have access to the good jobs that this office can provide.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's really good to hear, and I just, as a Greater Minnesota legislator, really appreciate that and hope that continues to be your perspective. So thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Auditor Blaha. When I heard you first give your presentation and you weeks ago and you said that you didn't have an assistant, and I'm just kind of curious, can you tell me, it doesn't seem efficient for me for you to be using your time answering the phones and doing routine work where you can be using your time doing more important work. Can you tell me how has this office functioned previously without that position being filled?
That's an
auditor.
Thank you. That's such a great question. And jumping on that, not sure. So there are times when I'm making my binders for things, which I love doing. Again, as a former teacher, I kind of enjoy some of that kind of work. Not the most efficient at it. I think what we've seen is one of the things the office has struggled to do is to stay connected because of that. When you have your auditor doing things like, by the way, if you ever send an email into the state auditor's office, any account that says state auditor, it is me answering it. I am going through those myself. I have to because petitions come in, so I'm catching all of those. The binders I make, I am making myself. I would rather use that time talking to you. I would rather use that time talking to county commissioners. I would rather use that time talking to local treasurers. And I think that that would be the difference here. I think people have noticed that this office has, over time, struggled to stay connected because, and in part because, everybody's doing so many jobs that so much of our communication is getting stuck at the door. You know, I'm seeing that we have great research happening in our office. We have great ideas coming out of our office, and they're stuck at the door because we have not had the support in the Constitution Division, which also means we're not supporting our communication side, and a lot of it isn't getting out the door. And so by adding this position, my communications director will be able to stop doing my scheduling and focus on communications, making sure that when we have a report about firefighters and we see a problem with survivor benefits and disability payouts, everyone can know that. And so that's, I think, the important piece of it. I think that where we've lost is in connection over time to save money. I mean, I understand why Auditor Otto cut the position, I think. She was under some financial pressure, was looking for whatever she could do. She also doesn't seem to sleep. So, I mean, there are a lot of things. That, I mean, she's really very, very good at her job, and she's also been in the job for over 10 years. And so I think, though, to do this job at its most effective and the most connected, we need somebody else in there.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you. Just one more follow-up. First, I would like to say, as much as I think of your skills as great, I do think you become a bottleneck if you are doing your own assistant work as well. And there's certainly better ways, I believe, that you could be using your time. That's my personal opinion. But I want to know about the investigations. Mm-hmm. Do you see your office doing more or less investigations as you go forward?
Auditor Blaha.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Nelson, Representative. Particularly after our Shakopee investigation, where we assisted law enforcement in finding the issues with the purchasing card used by the superintendent, That's when we really started seeing local law enforcement talk to each other more about the idea of getting us involved. And so we're really excited about that opportunity. And so I anticipate that we're going to see more pressure on that office in a good way. We really want to be there for local law enforcement in particular. And so that's one of the reasons we want to make sure that they're ready. I don't want to, again, I don't think we're at a place where we can assume it to bring on another lawyer, but just bringing on another, just bringing on administration will free up our legal people from doing the administrative work and can be ready to focus on turning around investigations, not only more of them, but also more quickly.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Monitor, I'll take you back to the start of your presentation. You're talking about townships.
Yes.
And you said that 100 of them were struggling to get their reports in, but how many did not get their reports in?
When I say that's 100, around 100. It's been fluctuating around 100 for the past few years. The Association of Townships has been great trying to help us kind of track people down, but what it takes often is just somebody following up and consistent follow-up. Again, I think it's something that while I appreciate the work the Township Association is doing, that's really our job. It really is something that we need to be doing. And so what we end up doing is, you know, trying to track them down with our interns, but we don't have the time to give the time needed. I'm anticipating that the more we track this down, the more we'll find a need for assistance. We want that township specialist to be then ready when they track that township down and hear, okay, our last person, she retired after 40 years, we can't find the files. You know, it's usually that kind of a thing going on where it's a transition. Or an overwhelmed person on their third job that they're virtually volunteering for. And so we want to use that township specialist not only to track that down, but respond to what we find when we track it down, because we anticipate finding people who need support in that process.
Representative Green.
Well, thank you for that answer. And that was one the question that I had because of the 100. I know that serving the town board for a long time, and in my area, we usually only had maybe one. And the Township Association, which we pay dues to,
right,
is very good at that. They do the training,
mm-hmm.
but out of almost 1,800, even though 100 is a lot, it's not really that bad to catch up on those when you consider that every 3 years, potentially, or maybe 2 years on the auditor, you could be looking for a new auditor, and they're not easy to find. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So I do think they do a really good job keeping up on that. So just wanted to throw that in there that they do have the support coming from the association as well. They have people on staff to do that. So,
and Representative Auditor or Auditor Baja, it's not the same 100 townships. It rotates around or do we have some that are habitually?
We have some that are more persistently a challenge. And then some that turn over. And so I think you're absolutely right. One of the things, though, that we saw, they looked back and compared those who didn't report to those who ended up in investigation. We saw a high correlation there. So it's I think, the idea of, it's not just we want the numbers, which we do, helps you all make good decisions, but often this is a flag. And so we haven't had a chance to really crack this, that it hasn't dropped over time, even with those efforts. And we want to make sure that these don't grow into problems. And so that's one of our red flags. But even in general, any support for the townships, we want to be able to provide more in general. So they're not just going to be tracking down these 100. They're also going to be helping with answering the CTAS questions and also responding to what needs they have and building the relationship so we know. It's like, is there something else they want from our office? Do they want us to help build them a pool of auditors? Do they want us to help with some other things? So we want to be able to do that as well.
Okay. Just one more comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that in the townships, just so that everybody's aware, you don't have people out there trying to cheat anybody. You got people out there with no ability even to use the CTAS.
Mm-hmm.
Townships, many of them don't have running water. They have outdoor outhouse outside there. And so they're doing this work from their home.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have the ability to do that, they're doing them by paper. They can be overwhelmed with a lot of the regulations coming from the state and the state auditor
mm-hmm.
that change. And it's not always easy. So I think that I think they do a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it will get better as technology gets better and broadband goes out, And so I think there's more to it than just another staff, but thank you.
I agree.
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Auditor Blaha. Sorry I was a little late this morning, but as I was coming in, you were talking about your intern program, and I just wanted to, could you tell me, do you have good success with your interns? And I'm just curious if that is a reliable resource for you to utilize.
Auditor Blaha. I'm having trouble speaking this morning.
You are not the only chair. Every chair is struggling with my name at the start. Thank you for the question. Yes, we have great interns. I want to be very clear. They're amazing. We have interns also in our audit division, and that's where most of our interns are. And it's our way of training people up. It's a great way for us to gain staff. Many of our current staff started as interns in our office. It's a highly specialized work, so it really helps to have that pipeline into our office. Another reason for also having field offices in Greater Minnesota, if you're near a college or near a technical college that is providing audit training, it's a great place to pull in interns and get them that experience they need to launch a successful career. They're very good at what they do, but it's getting increasingly difficult to get interns, especially as the job market improves in our area. We've struggled lately. Our interns have been harder to come by.
Representative Akam. Thank you. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, just a clarification. I'm not sure if it goes to staff or Madam Auditor. Starting on page 12, it goes into state auditor practices and so forth. And I'm wondering, is that just kind of a subset of what we're seeing on page 4 with the 1,000, the direct appropriation? So there's like 10 million and 20 is the forecast base compared to 7 or whatever. I'm just curious how that's working together on these pages. I think that it's just kind of a more of a detail of what's going on with pages 3 and 4.
Mr. Chair and members, the way that the budget books are set up, there's a hierarchy of the agency and then program level and then budget activity level. And so you're correct, you're seeing now information that's at the budget activity level. And members that were on this committee 2 years ago will remember that the committee chose to appropriate at a much lower level, so that's why their budget is broken down to this level.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think, Madam Auditor, you said that there were 77 employees, but when I look on page 3 for the forecast, it's looking more like 90, and I'm curious where that discrepancy is.
See if I've got this. Yeah, Director Lindeman, if you want to speak to that.
Director Lindeman.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, so the budget book presents all current filled positions. So when the state auditor talked about 79 positions, those are current staff that we have hired. But with turnover and everything, we usually like to be at about 90 to 100 staff. So the budget book is showing what where we would be fully staffed.
We have vacancies.
Yeah.
Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So the bottom line, we're going to be appropriating the full amount. I would assume it can't get spent unless the staff is there, or could it get spent on higher salaries or other things because it's been appropriated?
Mr. Chair, Representative, so yes, the state auditor's position is that most of those vacant positions are in our audit practice division, and the state auditor's position is unless we fill those positions, we're not going to spend that on anything else. There are some dollars that in our appropriation for technology, for rent, for supplies, that sort of stuff. But if those positions are not filled, if we don't have the work to do, those dollars won't be spent.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the reason I bring up the accountability there, and this doesn't reflect on the new auditor, but I believe there was a lawsuit going on for a few years. And my suspicion is that maybe that's part of the reason on the staffing, that there had to be some backfill and so forth there, or would that be incorrect?
Auditor Blaha.
Thank you. That's a really good question. It looks that the $250,000 that they spent over 3 years on that lawsuit was fully absorbed over those 3 years. So I didn't come in with a deficit. I didn't come in with behind. It was all taken care of before I and wrapped up before I got there. There had been a number of naturally occurring big long vacancies, and that basically absorbed the cost over those 3 years. So these are again vacancies that one the audit division vacancy we wouldn't fill. The auditor that's just said she's going over the legislative auditor, we'll fill that. We talked to Jim about taking one of my people. It was amazing. But most of those positions would be only filled if needed. I won't be moving it over to trick out the website or covering that with other funds, things like that.
Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's really the heart of my question. And it's not an accusation that it would happen again, but we're the stewards of the taxpayer money. Mm-hmm. And I think if we're going to make appropriations, which we are, and it's kind of open-ended like this, that it would be nice to have more accountability in place that says that, look, it has to be used for this, and if it's not used for this, for specifically what is talked about, that it's returned back to the general fund. And again, it's not an accusation, but I think it's just a prudent business practice that when we're asked to appropriate for things that aren't yet there, that indeed we have accountability.
And Mr. and Representative Vogel, I think the auditor said this before, but a lot of those positions, the audit positions, they're covered by the fees that they charge for them. If they don't charge the fees, they don't fill the positions. So, Madam Auditor, that's easier for.
Yeah, that's what they do in the office too. Thank you. And also remember that money doesn't actually get to me. We have the authority to spend it, but it doesn't sit in our account. And I think that since we had an enterprise fund in the past, that got a little confusing that I think people think the money comes to our office and it sits there. It does not. You're giving me the authority to spend it on the things I'm saying I'm spending it on, but that's it. It's not sitting in my office in a vault anywhere. But also remind the other piece of accountability you do have as an elected official, you are welcome to remind the voters if I do not do what I say I'm going to do on tape. In the public record. So I think that's one of the reasons, though, too. I also want to come up and make that clear. This is something that I want to be held accountable to. I absolutely expect you to be looking at my budget when we're done. And if I am not spending as I am spending, I want you to tell everybody.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. I was going to call you, Madam.
Madam Chair, I've been called worse.
Won't go any further with it, but I really do believe that this is something that we need to pay attention to going forward. And again, not an accusation about what might happen, but just being good stewards.
Thank you. Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Chair and Auditor Blaha, I want to point out an example recently that I personally had with your office that basically saved my rear end. It's in my tax credit for firefighters, and it showed how close you're watching these accounts. In my particular bill that I was offering, that's going to be offered, they wanted to make sure that I was not going to cause damage to the pensions, and they came and talked to me right away about that, and I thank them for that. So I do I see the need to make sure that these things are corrected, and as a new legislator, thank you. Because I not only would probably my job be gone, but also I'd have to leave the state because I know these people. So, thank you,
Madam Auditor.
I really appreciate it, and I'll pass that on to our pension division. That is really the exact kind of work we want to endeavor to do. We want to talk with you before there is a problem. We want any problems that we have or any disagreements we have to be aired out here. And we know that often you are, as you're intending to do good work, we want to make sure that your intention actually shows up in your bills on there, too. Just another, it kind of gives me an excuse also to remind people that our pension division is funded by an offset from the, am I saying that right? No, a part, it is funded by the pensions. We provide our oversight as part of the pension fund. And our TIF division, our tax increment finance division, is funded out of tax increment. And so those two divisions are fully covered outside of the budget that you're going to see here.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, first of all, to clarify for the members from the Metro, the aforementioned outhouses are both very nice and ecologically sound. But mentioned in the testimony, Madam Auditor, you referenced several unfilled positions and positions that have been unfilled for years. What is the aggregate of years of, you know, FTEs and those positions you're referring to?
I think that Director Lindeman can help, because they're a little different in area to area. The vacancies in, say, the deputy and the executive assistant have been open for much longer. But maybe you could speak, especially in the audit division, kind of when we had the drops and in staffing there.
So if we're talking about the, Mr. Chair, if we're talking about the positions that are in the township and the deputy, I think the deputy position has been vacant for about 12 years. You know, I don't think Auditor Otto ever filled the third position during her administration. The executive assistant's been vacant for about 8 years. I'm not sure about the support staff positions, how long those have been vacant. And then the vacant positions we have in our audit practice division, that's kind of gone up and down over the years with the changing in who we're auditing and stuff. That's had an effect. Obviously, we haven't had to lay anybody off with any decreases in clients, but we've, through attrition, have kind of watched how many positions we have. And obviously, as we hopefully find new clients or clients come back to us, we would slowly increase those positions back up.
So I think that would be, you know, we're talking about since the lawsuit, let's say talk about that, since that last law, that's where we saw the drop from around 100 down to where we are now, about 79. So that was where that drop started happening most recently. The earlier drop happened back in, 2003, 2004, and that was when, during the recession, we were making, everybody's making those big cuts. So, these positions that we're talking about, these vacancies, so we're talking no more than 3 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, when you're doing your budget work, these positions were still part of the base budget for the department. What sort of dollars did it represent out of that base?
I don't know if we can do it off the top of our head here.
Madam Auditor, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry, thank you. So I'm thinking that if we think of it as, I think if you thought of it as 13 positions out of what was about 100 positions at one point, that would be the way to think of that amount. And I think that what's tricky about the base, though, since these positions are fully covered by our fees, our fee structure is set so it has to cover everything they're doing of these positions. So when you look at the budget, it's offset by the fees that come in. So as we're thinking of our budget, it's not changing our overall what we are, how we're impacting the state. But it does. The only way it would impact the state is if we would hire positions that we cannot cover by our fees.
Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, the two that you referenced, the deputy, the executive assistant. Looking at your budget request now, it shows about, for the biennium, $160,000, a little bit more than that.
Yes.
For the executive assistant and, for the deputy, it's substantially greater than that.
True.
So combining the two, those two aren't the fee ones, I believe. Since you're actually asking for more money in your budget, that's actually general fund budgeted positions.
True.
And, just looking at that's several hundred thousand dollars just in those two. I was just trying to get some confirmation so that you had mentioned that the part of the reason why the positions, that you're asking for more is the previous auditor had financial constraints. Or financial pressure, I believe that's the phrase that you utilized. And so I'm trying to analyze, and with several hundred thousand dollars, which is actually more than what the, as you mentioned, the 250, quarter million,
sure,
for the lawsuits, So I'm trying to understand financial pressures, and you've got unfilled positions that are funded. Where else were these funds needed to cause those financial pressure?
Madam Auditor.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Thank you, Representative Quam. Now, I'm understanding your question now. I get what you're saying there. Those positions, these four positions that are separated new, were not included in our base budget, going backward. These were positions that had been let go long before, so they went out of our base budget and were not included in there. So under Auditor Otto's tenure, these four positions were not considered vacancies. They did not exist. They were gone. So these four positions are new positions based, compared to our current base. So I think, yes, the vacancies we're talking about are in the audit practice division, where there are positions that we that would have gotten us back up to where we would have been in the past, about 100 full staff. That included vacancies in audit, but not these four positions. We set them out as new and distinct, so you could see that they were separate and they would be an increase, to make that very clear.
So, Madam Auditor, these are addition to the base.
Absolutely.
They weren't already in the base.
And that's why that 4.5% at the end primarily comes from those four positions that we're talking about there.
Representative
Quam. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Some of my confusion, for clearing that up. Some of my confusion is recalling repeated testimony from the previous auditor that doesn't quite correspond to what you said, because they had savings from unfilled positions that opened up funding. So the implication was it was from general fund, but apparently it was from the fees, excesses from the fees collected from all of the local entities of government, because that would be the only other source of funding to that auditor other than the general funds. So thank you for clearing up that there were excess fees, and that's where the surplus came from, that they could spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on outside legal force. And I do like the idea that you're having the administrative assistant for the lawyers, so that would free them up to do legal stuff. And I think if the previous auditor had maybe taken that same course, they would have had lawyers that they could have done it in-house and not paid the contingency fees and other fees outside of the auditor's office.
Madam Auditor.
Chair Nelson, Representative Quam. Okay, I want to make sure I don't think I cleared it up. Let's be clear. The vacancies that I'm talking about that covered the lawsuit were vacancies in the part of our budget that does come from the general appropriation. So it would have been in other divisions, not the audit division. So it would have come out of the government information division, for instance. It would have come out. It did come out of part of the pension division. So these things came out of other positions, other divisions that were not, that are part of the general fund. So no, the fees, in fact, MMV does a very good job that would not, that could not be included in our fees. When we build our fee structure, you can only include audit practice in that fee structure. And one thing that MMV is good about is double checking to make sure that our fees are only on audit. We could not include any costs that would have gone to a lawsuit in that area. But thank you for making sure that I know it's complicated, so I appreciate you hanging with me and helping me clarify.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then these unfilled positions in government information, pensions, these other areas are continuing to be unfilled because they're not needed?
They're filled.
Madam Auditor.
They're currently filled. As I came in, they've been filled by that point. So it was the gaps that they had in the 3 years up to my tenure that covered the $250,000. And you can imagine a few people, you know, that doesn't take too many gaps to fill that to make $250,000. So when you're talking about both pay and benefits. So that's where those positions were filled. Again, I came in, we don't have anything unfilled due to the lawsuit.
Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Auditor, thanks for your presentation.
Great. Thank you.
And while we're getting set up for this the AG's office, Representative Quam, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I have reviewed the minutes and would move to accept them.
Motion's been made to approve the minutes from March 13, 2019. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, how are you? Good to see you and the committee.
I'm doing okay, I guess.
All right.
If you're ready, you can proceed with your presentation, and we'll see if we got any money to give you.
All right. Thank you. Well, Mr. Chairman and members, thanks for the time this morning. Definitely appreciate being with you again, and thanks for having me back. With me today here is Mr. Ray Smith. He's the finance director for the Attorney General's office, and he's going to be joining me in the presentation of our budget today. the work. Let me just tell you about what we're doing, and what we need the money for. Quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, my job as Attorney General is to represent the state of Minnesota, support law enforcement, to help the people of the state afford their lives and live with dignity and respect. When I was with you last month, I talked about the major duties of the Attorney General's office. Let me point out that these duties are constitutional, they're statutory, and they're rooted in common law, and they form my job description. Principal among them are things like, one, representing and protecting the interests of the more than 100 state agencies, boards, and commissions of our state who discharge various very important work, and it's our job to represent them. Number two, protect the people of Minnesota, especially as the enforcer of the state's consumer protection, antitrust, and charities law. This can take many forms: mediation, settlement, assurances of discontinuance, lawsuits, and others. But this responsibility is also well rooted in Minnesota law. Minnesota Statute Section 8.31 reads, quote, the Attorney General shall investigate violations of the law of this state respecting unfair, discriminatory, or other unlawful practices in business, commerce, or trade. And so that is a responsibility we take very seriously. Three, enhancing public safety by supporting county attorneys, especially from Greater Minnesota, in criminal justice related matters. My policy is that there is no county too small or too far away from the metro to not receive the help of the Attorney General's office when they need it. In order to fulfill that promise, we need resources to meet those obligations. And that's why I've been talking with county attorneys in every corner of the state of Minnesota. I've been to every meeting of that organization since December, and I intend to have a regular and constant presence. In fact, today I'm leaving this morning to head to the Iron Range in Duluth, where I'll be meeting with St. Louis County Attorney. What they've told me and what they've shared is that they want and need an active partnership with the Attorney General's office, and it's my commitment to meet our end of that partnership. When I was here last month, some members mentioned to me that making sure that Greater Minnesota had the support that it needed was very important to them. And again, my budget request reflects that that duty and that effort to meet those commitments. My office is and will be a full active partner of our county attorneys to make sure that people live safely and justly, and justice is applied safely and everywhere in our state. Now, let me just talk about the budget, if I may. The budget the governor has proposed for the Attorney General's office reflects some of the work that I've already shared with you. Mr. Ray Smith is prepared to discuss this in his presentation. But essentially what he'll touch on is detail around the change items in the Attorney General's budget. A few thoughts before I turn it over to Mr. Smith. Since the beginning of this century, the law has not become simpler. It's become more complex. State agencies have faced greater challenges, and the economy has become more complex. Consumer scams have become more clever and tricky and difficult to detect, and the struggles families face to afford their lives have become more complex as well. The society as a whole has not become less litigious. Actually, it's become more. And yet, the Minnesota Attorney General's office is operating with a budget that has essentially been flatlined for many years. As Mr. Smith will show you, the purchasing power of those dollars devoted to defending the vast array of interests I've outlined already, after adjusting for inflation, have actually fallen dramatically. And the change requests that we have submitted to Governor Walz, which he has included in his budget proposal to you, reflect our up-to-date reality and the needs of the people of the state to do our duty to defend the state, protect consumers, enhance public safety in partnership with our colleagues and our partners. Thank you. You can tell, huh?
Yeah.
We only have three change requests, Mr. Chairman and members. We thought long and hard about them. We consulted our colleagues and our allies and our partners as we formed them, and we didn't want to throw a whole bunch of them against the wall to see what would stick. We took a very prudent, careful look at what we needed and presented to the governor and to you. And so with that, I'll ask Mr. Smith to go into greater detail.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the tape, and then you can proceed.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Members, Ray Smith, Director of Finance for the Office of the Minnesota Attorney General. Thank you again for the opportunity to appear for you and talk a little bit more about our budget. As you know, we started a dialogue last time about our change items. And before I go specifically into the change items, I wanted to kind of bring back some of the slides that I brought last time and amplify a bit based on the questions and feedback that you gave to me. So the first slide that we presented was the AGO general fund appropriation over time. To clarify, this is the actual appropriation. On July 1, 2002, the legislature put $27 million approximately into our account at the beginning of the year. Beginning of this fiscal year, this biennium, that's been $22 million. So a $4.7 million reduction in actual dollars. We spent a bit of time talking about the purchasing power of this and inflation adjustments with the members. So we created kind of a new slide. The purchasing power of that appropriation that if you gave it to us today, what you gave us in 2002, that purchasing power has been eroded by over $15 million. I testified last time that I said our purchasing power has gone down by more than half. I actually need to clarify, it's gone down by almost 60%. In terms of what we can do with the legislative appropriation we receive in the general fund. Our change items that were coming before to you, try to reverse some of this erosion, but it's not moving it much. The most economists are expecting a modest amount of inflation the next couple of years, another 2% in 2020 and 2% in 2021. We just want to stop the erosion and devote some resources to things that you gave us feedback that you want us to devote resources to. Last time I presented this slide, which is really just an index comparing our legislative appropriation to state government appropriations overall. This is in actual dollars. It is not inflation adjusted. So what we did was we said, back in 2002, let's set them both equal to 100 and see what happens to the lines. Our budget, as I told you, went down 4.7 in actual dollars, much more in inflation dollars. That's what you're seeing in the index. Almost 5 million out of 20 million, 27 million, that's a 20% cut. State government overall grown about 80% in actual dollars. It's grown less than that in inflation dollars, of course. The pre-change items that we're bringing towards you are not going to materially change this slide when I come back to you in 2 years. They're just going to stop the gap from growing larger. The final slide, the slides that I go into, really talk about the motivation for one of our change items, salaries. Our budget is primarily for compensation to people. 83% of it goes to that. About 10% of it goes to fixed costs, our leases on our offices, Westlaw subscriptions, copy machines to produce the tremendous volumes of paper that litigation produces today, and then 7% for everything else. So the next slide really is one you've seen before, which is a comparison of salaries between our office and other public law offices in the state of Minnesota, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Minneapolis, Hennepin County, Ramsey County. There's a significant gap between the average salaries that we are able to pay and what our other public law offices pay it currently. The last time I was here, we had a little bit of dialogue talking about, you know, how do we talk about the relative experience of our attorneys compared to these offices. We put together a couple of pieces of information for you. In the next slide is really simply a comparison between what our line level attorneys make on average, $96,000, and what a first year lawyer makes at the average law firm in the private sector. We have attorneys with average experience at our top grade S3, senior attorneys who have 20 years of experience on average or more, who are making $20,000 to $30,000 less than someone coming right out of law school, going to a law firm, and making $20,000 to $25,000 less than mid-level attorneys at the other public law offices. We do view that our primary competition for people who have a passion for public service is the other public law offices. But the difference between what we are able to compensate and what they're able to compensate is pretty stark, and we're trying to make a dent in that gap, or at least make it not grow larger. With respect to the change items, we have three of them. The first one, I want to thank the members for the positive feedback I received last time when we were here, assistance to rural county attorneys. So of our total change requests, a little more than half of it is to beef up the area that we can provide assistance to rural county attorneys. We appreciate that the governor supported this recommendation as well. The second change item goes to the salaries gap that we're seeing here. We want to attract and retain talent needed to defend state agencies and the people of Minnesota. We talked to our peers in HR and finance at the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, the Ramsey County Attorney Offices. They are committing to giving raises. In the state terms, you talk about step increases, which are merit increases, and then cost of living adjustments or general increases. We're expecting them to offer 5% raises in the next 2 years each year for merit increases and for inflationary increases. Unless we are able to receive our change item to pay more for our attorneys, the gap between the salaries that you're seeing on the screen is going to grow. Our final change item, which represents in total, you know, 10% of our total change item, is a change item to continue to increase the amount of sophisticated software that we can apply to the complex cases that we litigate against really sophisticated law firms. When I started doing administrative law quite some time ago, litigation really was somebody would roll up in a van with a few dollies full of banker's box of documents, and you'd go through it. We still get at least that much of paper, but we also get hard drives with terabytes of data that we have to sift through. And it becomes this war between sophisticated parties and paper. We need to combat with the top compete with the top law firms if we're going to defend the state and defend state agencies. So we're asking for additional funding to provide software license to 25 more of our staff and a dedicated staff person who can support those technology needs in our complex cases. Those are my comments on our change items. I know you may have some questions on them, so I've tried to be brief.
And so the first question I have here is, so the FTEs are looking here at both the enhanced criminal enforcement for the rural counties and this IT litigation support. Those FTEs are new FTEs, new people you'll be hiring, or is this to maintain the existing staff?
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Both of those are new FTEs over what we've been able to provide. The other change item is the inflation adjustment for everyone else at the office.
And the gentleman here at the end of the table, he's with you?
Yes. This is Mr. Dick Allen. He's a special assistant to the Attorney General, and he's
just wanted to make sure only House members or staff that are staffing are supposed to be sitting at the table, but that's why I wanted to ask. Yeah.
Thank you. Very good. But may I just note, Mr. Chairman, that when Skip Humphrey was the Attorney General, there were about 260 lawyers. Now there's about 130. We actually need we need the extra help.
Okay. And the question to Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And kind of a comment, kind of a question, but it's been refreshing to have two of our statewide offices in today, and both have change items that reflect a commitment to greater Minnesota and the whole state, and I really appreciate that. To see that, and you said it was, and looking at it here, that it's almost half of your change item requests will go to impact or do work throughout the state. So can you give me just a little bit of an example of what that could look like? I mean, I've read through some of the narrative, but specifically, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't want to ask you to share anything you can't share. But if you could just paint a picture of some of the examples of how you could see this impacting rural counties and places in greater Minnesota.
General Ellison.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, let me just share with you. We get requests from greater Minnesota county attorneys on a regular basis regarding representation. If you have a county that has, you know, 2 to 8 lawyers and you have a homicide, it's just very difficult for them to do. It's difficult to get the expertise on how to prosecute a murder case if you see one only every 3 or 4 years. And on top of that, some of these cases have blood spatter, DNA, complicated documents, and they call on us on a regular basis to help them. And we like to be able to meet the requests that we get. But the fact is, sometimes we have to triage and prioritize, and other times we can't get to them as fast as we want to, simply because of our own staffing pressures. And in addition to that, it's not only criminal prosecution; it's also economic crimes. You know, there are economic crimes and violations we're quite concerned about. We do want to help people afford their lives, and we want to make sure that the scammers and the fraudsters are held accountable. So that's really kind of what it's all about. I mean, there are examples of homicides that have occurred in greater Minnesota that, you know, we didn't do. And I don't want that to happen because I think justice should be equal everywhere.
Representative Olson.
That's it. Thank you.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair and Attorney General. I want to say I'm really excited. It sounds weird to say, but I'm really excited to see your request for the IT specialist. I do a lot of work in the legal arena, even though I'm not an attorney. And what I often see is this, it's the email. It's the email that triggers who is really guilty and who is not guilty. And people forget when they're writing email that they are laying an evidentiary trail. So when you are looking at this software and this IT and specialist, how much faster do you think that will make your work? What will those efficiencies look like in your office? I think that's something that's really important for the committee to understand. Just when I think about it, I think about the difference between using a slide rule and a calculator.
Oh, yeah.
Can you maybe expand upon that just a little bit, what that tool will do for your office?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, let me illustrate this example for a moment. Say, for example, you have somebody who is committing fraud in, say, the child care, the Medicaid area, some other area. They get caught, and now they can't operate under their own name anymore. So they go get their three-year-old nephew and call the firm and say, this is the person now. How do we keep up with this ever-changing game of shells? It's very difficult unless you have software. Now, look, we have very, very talented folks who connect the dots. But, I mean, no self-respecting criminal is going to try to make it easy for us. So we have to we need to keep up. And as Mr. Smith noted a moment ago, when we're suing some folks to hold them accountable, we may get a ton of documents that we simply have to find a way to process, upload, review quickly. And if we don't have the technology to do it, that puts us at a competitive disadvantage. Mm-hmm. And so we want to do that. I mean, just the other day, we brought to justice an institution that would send pop-ups out to seniors saying that your computer is going to be destroyed unless you call them immediately, in which case they'd get your data, and then they actually would start ripping you off. Well, these people are quick, and some of the ones that do it will shut down and reopen in a new name just as fast as they have they've done the first wrongdoing. We need to be able to keep up with them, document them, keep the information, retain the information, and so we need the information. We need that software capability. Thank you.
Representative Claiborne.
Mr. Chair, I just want to say this is something that is absolutely critical to any defense or any prosecution firm in today's environment, and I wholeheartedly support this.
And you're lucky Representative Elkins did make it in this morning.
He usually does.
Had trouble with the pothole this morning and lost a tire on his car. So anyway, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for clarification on this last topic, the AG's office doesn't call me up because I did something bad and I need to buy these cards at Walmart and give you the numbers. So, I mean,
Mr. Chairman, Representative, thank you for noting that.
Yeah, it is amazing what different things people try, and it's good to have people watching out for us. Looking at the charts, the graphs and that, are you including in there the external, there are fees and costs? Because when you have, and it's fairly common, you have outside groups handling some of the workload, and it's not just the hourly charges, but they're also copying and all the other normal internal fees or costs that you'd have that is out there. So that's taking some of the workload. I'm assuming that when you had the from 2002 to 2018 in your graphing, that's only general fund and the normal funding stream. It's not anything that external of where you split the proceeds on contingency. And that.
Would you like to address that, Mr. Smith?
Mr. Smith?
Chair Nelson, Representative Quam. The pie chart, that's our budget of what we spend. So if we're spending on expert witnesses, court reporter transcripts, those sorts of things, that's out of the 7%. If you're talking on a contingency fee case, that's not part of the budget.
Mr. Chair, as I stated, the 2002 to 2018 graph, and you're showing a huge delta, but I don't think I'm seeing in there some of the cost of doing business that's covered by, you go out and you do your external contingency stuff, you split the pie from proceeds. I'm also not seeing on there the times where you, the department, and it was previous, avoided costs and duties by not defending the constitutionality of our duly passed and signed laws and having other governmental entities that are also paid by the taxpayers footing the bill to do that. You know, when I look at the AG's office, I look at what is the service that the AG's providing, and I look at the total picture of it. And, you know, we can debate whether, you know, you said it went from 260 to 130. There were decisions in that. But also then it hides some of the actual duties of the AG that shifted off to external entities as opposed to being kept in-house. And, you know, that's why, to me, it looks as if there's the rest of the story missing from that graph. And if there was some additional information to be passed on, because we should, as a legislature, have a discussion of if we want to beef up the muscle and the power of the AG's office, then we should have the whole story and decide where the long-term investment should be. And that's why I'm asking for the rest of the story, and I didn't quite see it in the charts that were presented.
Attorney General.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, this graph is designed to show how the state's appropriation has reflected in the Attorney General's office over the course of time. It's not designed to show more than that. It's just designed to say the state's appropriated X amount of dollars, and here has been the history of that appropriation to the Attorney General over that time. This is not to say that we have not engaged in certain other strategies to try to help protect the public. We have. But it is to say that no matter how you slice it, our ability to serve the public has been reduced. And quite frankly, I think that it is a good idea to discuss retaining lawyers in-house as opposed to moving them to other agencies. This is a worthwhile conversation. But for the purposes of today, we've come to the conclusion based on a multitude of conversations that we need to be competitive with other public service law firms. We need to have the technology support, and we need to have more attorneys to help us meet the needs of our partners. That doesn't change. Based on, even in light of your correct observation we still do work and have work done on our behalf that's not contained within the box of the Attorney General's budget, if I understand you properly.
Mr. Chair, the whole point behind is this is a constitutional office, and at some point over the history of this office and the legislature, it was decided to outsource part of the functionality. And I think that's represented in part of what you're seeing in that chart. And I just wanted to make sure members realized that that is part of what we're here because of those types of decisions.
Thank you. And Representative Quam, stuff that's happened in the past, like the tobacco lawsuit that Attorney General Humphrey put out and had a private law firm doing a contingency fee basis, that's something that's additional work that we don't have the capacity in the Attorney General's office to do. And I'm looking at this chart, and I'm looking at 2004, the dip there. The Attorney General is partly to blame as well as myself, because we were both in the House and passed the budget that year that cut when we had a huge deficit. So, I mean, some of this is ongoing and could be a matter of how we want to do that. If we wanted to beef up the office and have all those attorneys do all that work in-house, That's a whole nother discussion we'd have to have, and I think we'd have to really largely increase the budget. So, Representative Wong.
No, Mr. Chair, one clarification. Part of it is of my angst on this is the fact that we had local entities having to do and cover at local taxpayer expense, and that is a component, not just. And I think we know what counties we're talking about.
That's Representative Wong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Attorney General Ellison, I'm very compelled by the need for prosecutors to help out rural counties. I'm curious what the current number of prosecutors you have that is assisting in the criminal work of rural counties.
Attorney General.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Long. In terms of exact numbers, I'll ask Mr. Smith to pull those up for me, but I can tell you that we have essentially two criminal divisions. One is the Medicaid Fraud Division. That's funded through a federal grant, not entirely, but substantially, I think about 75%. So that's criminal work, and our lawyers are doing it, but the state of Minnesota pays for about 25% of that. The other cases that I've been referring to, the homicide cases, I would say we have around, I think, six people devoted to that work. And I have heard roundly that we need more. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, and you mentioned that there were 260 lawyers under Humphrey and 130 now. Do you have a sense for what the contingent of criminal lawyers who were assisting rural counties with some of these prosecutions was in the past?
Mr. Chairman, you know, Representative, I think that that is one of the units that took the biggest hit. And so I can't give you an exact number. But based on conversations and anecdotes, it's where we shrank our ability to serve the state perhaps the most, which is a big concern for me and I'm sure to everybody here.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And anecdotes I've heard are that the needs of these rural counties don't go away, even if the Attorney General's office isn't able to support them. So what they've wound up having to do is go to some of the big counties like Hennepin and Ramsey and Dakota and ask for support from them. And it's been very generous of the taxpayers of Hennepin County and Ramsey and Dakota that they're willing to have prosecutors assist some of these rural counties with their prosecutions. But this seems to me to be not the right way to approach it. It seems like this is a statewide issue, and supporting our rural counties in this way should be something that the entire state gets behind.
Mr. Chair, Representative Long, I quite agree, sir.
And Attorney General, I look, as you started talking about the need for increases for the lawyer or more lawyers, I would the joke would be to hire cheaper lawyers, but it looks like from the chart that we already are doing that. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to your chart with the first-year private sector and the Attorney General, I'm curious, the 239, was that of all law school graduates that they're pulling down that?
I believe this was kind of a survey of what the large law firms in Minneapolis were paying first-year associates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, maybe if we if get some further information, if that's going to be used publicly to know exactly what's going into it, because I don't know, it's possible, but I'd be surprised if people going to law school are graduating and coming out and getting $140,000. So just be nice to see the detail, if I could, please. And then secondly, I'm curious what percentage, you've got like 96,000 on the previous slide and so forth. What percentage do you add to that for benefits?
Mr. Smith.
In other words, total compensation.
Thank you, Chair Nelson, Representative Vogel. I think it's depending on how you define benefits. You know, we have Social Security obligations, we have pensions.
Health insurance.
Yeah, all of those sorts of things. My sort of rule of thumb is, if on average you tell me someone's salary is 100, add 33% of that for fully loaded benefits. But there's wide variance on that depending on whether someone is carrying family coverage or single coverage.
And one more, Mr. Chair. So, and is there an experience difference in this chart? In other words, the people that you have in the Attorney General's office compared to Ramsey-Hennepin County, is it a pretty similar years of experience, or is there a variance there?
Mr. Smith?
Thank you, Chair Nelson, Representative Vogel. I want to make sure I do apples-to-apples comparisons, and, you know, my first observation really is we're fairly competitive with the other parliament law offices right away, but as soon as they develop experience in the mid-range and the secondary range, we fall way behind. And so that's the talent we're having trouble retaining, is the experienced attorney in what we call our S2 and S3 range. So the data I had in possession from the various counties when we did our last survey, we have our most senior attorneys who average 21 years of experience. Their average salary is $113,000. The most senior attorneys at Hennepin County make $142,000 on average from the last survey results we gave from them. So we're talking a gap of $30,000, and I believe with comparable benefits, some better, some worse, but, you know, on average, I would say they're comparable. Ramsey County, $136,000. So we're talking close to $25,000 difference for the same level of seniority. When we go down to Hennepin and Ramsey's mid-level attorneys, those mid-level attorneys on average are making $5,000 to $10,000 more than our most senior attorneys with an average of 21 years of experience. So I'm very confident in saying that this bar chart is not skewed by an experience differential that we're comparing 20-year attorneys to first-year attorneys at our office.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could just get some follow-up again on that question to get the exacts, so that since that chart is not public, that we would have that. And thank you. Just and one note, I find it interesting that as we look at the governor's 2020 fiscal 21, we're going to be at about an average compensation if you take the full-time equivalent into the compensation, about $106,000. You know, earlier this week or last week, we had MMB in here, and they're at $112,000. And I do find that interesting that we've got highly qualified professionals here, and yet we've got an office which obviously needs professionals, but $6,000 a year average comp more. Just kind of an interesting note. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify the record. You and I have had many conversations about state government and the importance of state government, and you have instructed me on the commitment that our state employees have to serve the state. In answer to questions I've asked about wages and things like that, I just want to clarify for the record, you just used the word, you used the word cheaper, and I know that is not the word that you meant to use. So I just want to clarify the record based on our previous conversations that the committed attorneys who work in the Attorney General's office are highly skilled, highly qualified, but their commitment to public service has brought them to our office, and they are willing at that early stage in their career to accept lower wages. So I just want to make sure that our conversations are in line with the public testimony.
Yes, and I'm not anywhere denigrating them. I'm just saying, looking at what they're being paid, we're paying them less than they're being paid elsewhere. That's what I meant by cheaper. They're not.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
I've always stated that the people that work for the state and for our public sector are very dedicated people and are very good people, and sometimes we've had people that have denigrated our public employees, and I've been one of the first people to jump up and defend them in the past. Attorney General.
I just like to point out, Mr. Chairman, that one of the things I've learned in my first 2 months is that my legal expertise is primarily in the area of criminal law and civil trial law. I have been just amazed and blown away at some of the expertise that I have seen that these attorneys have. I mean, in complicated ratepayer cases, there is a lot of law and a lot of economics and a lot of energy policy that people have to know. And it's just difficult to retain people when they know they can walk out the door and make so much more. And I just thought I'd share that observation that unit after unit after unit, we have lawyers who understand extremely complicated issues, and yet we're asking them to fulfill that service for substantially less, and we're grateful for it because they benefit the people of the state. But I think that they deserve some consideration as well.
Thank you. Representative Albright.
Thank you. Good morning, Attorney General. Thank you for the letter that you supported in response to the letter I sent to your office. The members of the committee have it as well. I have some rapid-fire questions, but just as a request, as a follow-on, in the tobacco settlement, the fees that were assessed by Robbins Kaplan were definitely reduced, but it was also volunteered in terms of what the billable hours were by Robbins and Kaplan inside of their total costs. So I'm just wondering if you could provide a request on behalf of the Covington Group, if you could ask them, in addition to their out-of-pocket cost of $10 million, what their billable hours were for the work on behalf of the state with regard to the PFC settlement. That being said, I just wanted to have a couple questions about your change items, Mr. Keller or Mr. Attorney General. On the first change item, my sense is that's about salaries for existent attorneys within your office. The second change item is about actually expanding the number of attorneys within your office by a total of 11 over the course of the next 4 years. So I'll start with the easy one first, and that's actually with your change item number three with regard to Bolton. And we deal with, you know, IT, and you know the story about some of the software packages that we have rolled out over the past few years. So is the software package that you are looking to acquire a bolt-on to your existing system, or is this something that is will be proprietary to the state of Minnesota and will involve the work of Minute to create this software? Mr. Chair.
Chair Nelson, Representative Albright, the software that we currently use is a private sector software tool that, you know, does amazing things, to kind of follow on the questions about emails. If only it was just paper and email, you know, is what we code, say, our flat things in front of our children so they don't take them away from us. You have tweets, you have apps with information in them, and so many technological things to get the data for our cases. This is a private sector software solution that we and basically every top 200 law firm in the nation use. We are asking to fund 25 additional licenses for our staff than what we currently have been able to afford, and one FTE to actually support that technology for people who've never used it before.
Okay. In the essence of time, I'm just going to try and be rapid fire with these follow-ups here. That's great. I appreciate your answer on that one. Back to the change item number two with the additional attorneys. We're looking for 11 more attorneys over the course of the next several years. So, you know, we have a changing landscape, and the Attorney General spoke to the nature of some of his office's most recent settlements or prosecutions. But we're also dealing with, you know, add on to that, a prevalence of cybercrime, internet fraud, human trafficking. You mentioned those in your narrative. We're also dealing as a state now with child care fraud on a very, very broad and diverse basis. And so I'm just wondering, in terms of when you look to hire attorneys, what qualifications, what narratives are they looking in terms of filling in the within each department? Are you looking for what type of attorneys are you looking for?
Attorney General.
Mr. Chairman, we're looking for attorneys who understand that you have to have equal justice under the law, and you can't have one justice system in one part of the state and a totally different one in another part of the state. Two, that the public dollar is precious and needs.
Mr. Attorney General, I'm okay with that. I understand the narrative, but I'm actually looking from a mechanical, functional basis. So are you looking for attorneys that are familiar with forensic legalities with regard to Mr. Keller's conversation about how to look at data, how to look at tweets, how to look at Facebook pages and look at that, rather than the broad narrative? I want to look at what are the functionalities of the attorneys you're looking for.
Yeah, we need, Mr. Chairman, we're looking for lawyers who have a strong technological background, who understand how to prosecute and evaluate and understand sophisticated online consumer theft and understand how to do the kind of skip tracing and identifying of the real culprits, because that is a recurring problem. Somebody will do something that's illegal and then will close down and reopen under another name. We need to be able to find those people and determine their eligibility based on their prior history. So strong technological background, forensic background is important. Of course, there are some other lawyers we'll need who just know how to try a murder case. And that might mean they're going to have the skills to do that. That will involve evaluating DNA, blood spatter, forensic documentation, you know, and computer and tech background. But we're looking for people with those sort of technical backgrounds, but not exclusively, because, of course, not all the threats are in that area.
One final question, Mr. Chair. I know we're running out of time. I appreciate that comment. My county attorney and in Scott County has opened up a juvenile court. I'm looking forward to finding out how you would support that type of initiative in other counties through the ramp up of your support staff. So I'll look forward to hearing, you know, in your commentary later on that. Final thought, and you don't have to get back to the committee on this, but I do think it's imperative that we understand a little bit more about the OLA just came out with a very expansive report yesterday on CCAP fraud. And in the narrative on that, there was a broad conversation about the difficulty in prosecuting these types of abuses. And from the Attorney General's perspective and your office, I'm looking for some type of response to myself or the members of this committee in terms of what your office could do to assist these investigators, whether at the OIG or through DHS, to make sure that, to your opening statement about justice for all, making sure that there is justice being served for those that are perpetrating abuses of a program that serves the most vulnerable amongst us. So I'll leave that. You don't have to answer it, but I look forward to your response on that. Thank you.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Smith, you did catch my attention on the attorney salary issue as well, and I know there's been a little bit of discussion on it, but I just wanted to share with you that I have a number of friends and colleagues that are lawyers and have law firms, and I've had the privilege of understanding a little bit more about their business. And I don't agree with the characterization that you provided with regard to first year out of college lawyer. In particular, I just went to careerexplorer.com, lawyers in Minnesota, and it lists here that a senior lawyer in Minnesota, on average, earns $76.40 per hour, or $158,000. An experienced lawyer, average in Minnesota, earns $114,000, and a junior lawyer, which I'm presuming means right out of school, earns $41.58 an hour, or $86,000 an hour. Mr. Ellison, thank you for your comment and recognizing the specialization that exists within your department, and recognizing that in every industry there are areas of specialization that people are best suited to know and understand. I've introduced a bill, collateral consequences bill, and I'm particularly interested in your pursuit of making sure that our laws are applied equally and uniformly. And if you are convicted of a crime in rural Minnesota, you're much more likely to have a pretty harsh or severe sentence as opposed to that same crime or conviction in the metropolitan area. So I'd like to see you pursue some equity there, particularly in the area of minorities, face more consequences with regard to that. And I, too, have a concern about the role of the Attorney General's office and being a good fiduciary of the taxpayers' money. And I listened to some of your rhetoric with regard to what you were interested in on the campaign trail, certainly going after consumer issues and things like that. That's all well and good. But being a good fiduciary of the taxpayers' money, I'm particularly concerned about the OLA report that came out. And I hope that you will aggressively
go after those who have perpetrated fraud in this CCAP issue. There's just no excuse for that. It's money that was intended to help the most vulnerable, as Representative Albright said, and I look forward to doing on this committee. If you need more funds to pursue that, please let us know. That's the type of thing that needs to be rooted out, because there's just apparently a little bit too much waste, fraud, and abuse in our state government, and the lack of oversight that's happened in this last administration with regard to some of these issues. Also, the non-emergency transportation issue that's riddled with fraud as well, and we need to get into that and take care of the taxpayer. Thank you, sir.
And members, we're a little bit over time here. I apologize for Representative Green. They were not going to have time to get to him. We have a committee coming in after us. So with that, members, we're adjourned.